Yes, thank you. So, yeah, so I will tell, try to tell a story about emergent impurity effects in these systems, why impurity effects are particularly interesting in many of these compounds. From an experimental point of view, it is very interesting because I think it explains some unique features. From a theoretical point of view, it is really the study of impurity effects in metallic systems close to instabilities. What unusual features can happen there? What are RKKY couplings really in such systems? So the main collaborators in this project, or these projects, is Peter, who is, his spirit is in the room, even though he is not here right now. Maria, who has done most of the calculation, who's sitting right here. So the outline is the first I will talk about these emergent defects. I'll give a little bit of an experimental overview of transport and SGM particularly, go to our model results, consequences, and origin of what we call nematogens, which is a kind of impurity effect. And then I will present this new scenario we have for understanding the resistivity in these systems. And hopefully I'll have time to the second part too, where I'll talk about impurity whose long-range ordered phases. Here the experimental overview will, is mostly on magnesium, sorry, manganese-doped 1-2-2 systems. Talk about neutron X-ray, MuSR. Again, I'll explain our model and results. And here, this is where the discussion of unusual RKKY interactions really enter. And if I have time in the end, I will also talk about extreme TC suppressions. There's some new recent results where 0.3% impurities completely wipe out superconductivity, and I'll explain how that can come about from these studies. Okay, so let's start here. This plot we have seen already before in this conference. Very interesting. This is the resistivity anisotropy in barium-122 doped with cobalt as a function of doping. You see a huge anisotropy. It's centered, it's mainly at some finite doping range. Even though as you dope, the antiferromagnetism and the orthorhombicity is diminished. So what's the origin of that? It's become the hallmark of nematicity in many ways in these systems. It's also very interesting that the resistivity is actually larger along the ferromagnetic shorter B axis as opposed to the antiferromagnetic and longer A axis. These are some more details from another group. Here are the Askeron results, here's the Anil results. It's a function of doping, or the panels are different doping levels, and you see it here as a function of temperature. So some generic features is that annealing, you know, makes the resistivity drop. It also diminishes the anisotropy, but it still persists though. And the anisotropy disappears as we electron dope enough or as temperature becomes large enough. But there is some upturn along the B axis here, whereas the along the A axis the system seems to remain metallic. Let's skip that one. So the picture that was proposed in this experimental paper is that somehow cobalt acts quite differently as a function of doping. In the underdoped regime, it is as if this is some kind of anisotropic scatterer of this shape, whereas at higher doping, it just becomes sort of what we call a vegetable scatterer, which is sort of featureless. But there was not really any modeling of that. More recently, or more or less at the same time, I guess, there was then more on another study which also studied the whole dope case. And here the resistivity anisotropy is very small, maybe even negative. But the point is just here that it's much, much smaller than the electron dope case. What does this order look like? Well, we can stare at it, or experimentally people can stare at it with STM. And really, so I guess there's something like 10 papers now looking at disorder on the surface of various materials. This is actually iron selenium. This is a site, disorder site, where you see there's this kind of dimer state. It's clearly C2 symmetric, not C4 symmetric, even though the lattice is more or less C4 symmetric. The distance between A and B is something like 0.4%. It's a very small, you cannot see it here. Actually, STM cannot even detect that difference. But imperial states are dimers. Vortices are very elongated as well. And similar effects are seen in other systems. I'll return to it in the 1-2 case, which is where I'll really be focusing most of my attention. But a recent study here is in this material, in the undoped case. The sample is full of disorder, and they don't know the details of what causes what this disorder really is. But it's always dimers. It's kind of, you can see these kind of streaks. This is a low temperature, and as they heat up, they remain. It's easier to see it in the Fourier transform. It's really C2 symmetric. It even persists above the structural transition, which is very strange. Maybe this is caused by some kind of residual strain. We don't know. But the question is, from a theoretical point of view, it's challenging to try and unite these properties. So how does these C2 symmetric impurity states emerge? How do we explain this counterintuitive sign of the resistivity anisotropy, that it's, the resistivity is larger along B than A? Why does it decrease the anisotropy upon annealing? The pronounced increase in the resistivity along B, as T is approached, there was this upturn. Where does that come from? Why does the other component remain metallic-like? There are other questions about, you know, the sign change or the strong decrease of the anisotropy as we hold oak. And also the anisotropy decreases at temperature, and eventually it also goes away if there's enough electron doping. So there has been, of course, previous. Yeah.
I didn't quite understand how you see the effect as dimers. Is it from the
there's two effects here. This is in the STM paper, they call this the geometric dimer, which is this kind of elongated white beast. So presumably the impurity is right here. Then they have another electronic dimer, which is these black spots here. And there's nothing along this direction, you know?
I said the black thing is like two lattice constants or something, four?
You mean the white?
Yeah. And these sort of black things are much larger.
They're much larger, yeah. And all of them, this is a zoom in, but if you zoom out, they all have this structure. I'll show some other examples a little later. Okay. One study, what I think was one of the first ones here, to study the resistivity anisotropy was a study of critical spin fluctuations in a dirty spin-instoid metal. And this is some of Rafael's work, where as you approach this instability, the spin fluctuations are boosted along pi zero because you're in a pneumatic phase, It's a sort of a boring dependence along the Q2 vector, which is the zero pi vector. And this picks out or activates particularly these hotspots here, whereas these become passive, these become active. So you have strong scattering between these hotspots. And the cold spots are not important because of disorder. Normally they would short circuit this mechanism, but disorder can prevent that. And so the anisotropy is obvious here. It comes from these highly anisotropic spin fluctuations. And the sign of the resistivity anisotropy has to do with where these hotspots are. I mean, if you scatter a lot of quasiparticles that have a large component of fervent velocities along the b-axis, for example, the resistivity naturally becomes larger along the b-axis. So this explains this sort of splitting here. But there are several problems with this approach. It's very crucial that you have elliptical pockets here, but in the 1-2 systems, the ellipticity rotates as you go along kz. So one might be worried that this would sort of average out. that has not been proven.
So a question on the scattering. So if you scatter from red to blue and you stay along ky, so then you would have an increased anisotropy along x direction. Higher resistance along x.
You scatter mostly quasiparticles that are prone to travel along y, right? So then the resistivity goes up along b.
I see. Okay, but they still have components that are pretty much aligned along the b direction there, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what you need to get a larger resistivity along b. You need to scatter mostly these particles that have a component along b.
And it's all due to electricity of electron particles. If it was
simple,
you would not get.
Exactly. So in this picture, anisotropic spin fluctuations are crucial, and the ellipticity. And this is what drives the anisotropy. So in the picture I'll present, anisotropic spin fluctuations are also very important. That is the intrinsic part of it. But I will argue that there's a crucial intermediate step with generating these correct, purely dimer states. And that's important if we want to explain all these properties that I listed before of the resistivity. Okay, so the model we do is standard five-band model. We stay in real space. We include the strain effects, being in the pneumatic phase or strain-induced pneumatic phase, by an orbital splitting. So this we put in by hand. We've studied this also with slightly bands where your hopping elements are slightly different along x and y, get the same effect. Interactions are within the standard model here. And what we are interested in is really studying, pinned fluctuations and order tendencies around impurities. So we include the impurities, and we perform this unrestricted mean field Hartree-Fock, and then we solve this self-consistently on all sites and all orbitals until it's fully converged. The orthorhombicity, what it does, it exactly, picks out one of the components as you approach the instability. So no matter how small this is, if you come close enough to the instability, just look at the solid spots here. So this is Q1, Q2, the real part of the spin susceptibility at zero energy. And you see one of the frame doesn't feel that you're approaching a stoner instability, essentially, just the other one is singled out. And this is exactly this kind of anisotropic spin fluctuations. And it seems to be what's found. We saw Pan Cheng Dai's talk a few days ago. They see exactly this kind of tendency when they compare Q1 and Q2 and approach this structural transition. So now the question is, what does that do? What does this order do in such an environment? And so Maria started the runs. And what you see is that it really pins these spin fluctuations. The disorder is just put in as a boring on-site potential, but the spin fluctuations are pinned locally, and as you cool down and approach, it really makes this large structure, which is completely dominated by these Q1 peaks, just because the bulk is prone to be unstable to that particular structure. And so then we calculate the scattering rate within sort of standard Born approximation. And here the calculation is really to get the right scattering potential from this kind of emergent defect state. But we have the exact eigenstates and eigenvalues from the system, so you can just plug it in and do it. And you can calculate the scattering rates.
Okay, I'll ask a question about this.
Yeah.
So should I worry about vertex corrections?
Well, we have this stand-up form here, but there's, yes, in depends on who you are. This formula, as far as we know, has not been fully proven for multiband systems. At least I have not been able to find it. In a single band, the vertex corrections are here. Uh-huh. Right? So this is the multiband. The straightforward generalization to multibands would be this expression. And there's this old Siemann reference.
I just want to understand what's going on. So it's like impurity. Should I think that impurity is modifying collective fluctuations, and in turn?
I think of it the other way around, that the collective fluctuations modifies the impurity potential. Mm-hmm. This is not the usual boring delta function. This has an important structure in spin space and momentum space. Okay. So if we compare now, this is the scattering rate in momentum space. This is for the case of boring delta function impurity, which we call a broccoli, so a boring vegetable. And there is some anisotropy, of course, because the band is anisotropic. We put in this orbital splitting. But the anisotropy is quite small. And that is exactly what can be boosted, particular k points. In this case, where we have the nematogens, that the points on the fermions with the same orbital character, separated by this Q1 vector, becomes singled out, and if we plot the temperature dependent of these points, so this total scattering rate as a function of temperature, we see a hugely enhanced scattering rate exactly at these k points. And
yeah. Should I understand this in a simple way that you just take impurity potential and dress it out by magnetic fluctuation, which in practice means just multiplying by susceptibility?
In linear response, I think that's exactly what you get, yeah. Yeah.
But you are linear response, or it's better than that?
It's better than that. It's fully, yeah. It's
but still, it's.
Yeah. You can think of it like that.
Effective potential reflects closeness to magnetic density.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But you're just in this regard a question, right? So what happens below the magnetic transition? The fluctuations are like second order perturbations, you call it what? When you have the magnetic order, it gets zeros. All the perturbations theory, right? So perhaps I would expect that these magnitude effects get extremely large when you're unordered space. Perhaps you get it.
Yeah. Right. All right, so we calculate now the conductivity, and it is kind of what you would expect, that the resistivity, or maybe not what you expect, but it is harder to be an electron and move in the B direction because of this elongated structure here. So the resistivity does grow along the b-axis and decrease main metallic light along the a-axis. So if we plot the resistivity ratio, in the case of these nematogen states, it has this increase as a function of temperature, whereas the other normal scatterings does not. And so this is the picture I like. Let's see that so far I've only tried to explain this little region of the resistivity part, but from this kind of impurity effects, this comes right out of the calculus. Yeah?
So, Ben, will you show the previous slide? So, if I look at the two curves, right?
These two?
Right. So when you say that, B direction versus A direction, that's identifying the neutral. So, you're assuming that in the yellow phase, the B direction is ferromagnetic. Is that making sense?
Well, so the difference in the directional dependence here is decided by the, where do we have it? By the form, the particular form here, right? So this could have been the other way around, right? So with this particular form, it's the Q1 peaks that are singled out and that dominate everything.
Right.
And that, yeah?
Right, yeah. But isn't the rest the same as in Fernandez, Schmalen, Abraham's story?
The intrinsic part is the same. Right,
okay,
but now I will get to this. So I will get to the differences now with the doping dependence and so on.
It doesn't look to me that you are emphasizing on the hot spots.
No, well, there are some hot spots here. I mean, these are the kind of hot spots. But we don't. This model, I'll argue, is not dependent particularly on whether, for example, the ellipticity of this. That's irrelevant in this study.
Yeah. You said that. What about ellipticity?
Right. It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
Yeah. But Brent, this is my question. Delta is seen to be constant and independent of temperature.
Yes.
But in that sense, there is no wonder that even a vacuum will define the response, correct? Delta is always in the constant.
Right, right. So that models the fact that all these measurements are done in a strain field.
Yeah, right. Right. I'm asking this because, talking about Bell, there is this, I don't want to say controversy, but there is still a hot debate as to what exactly happens. If you take your favorite sample, you have to show the measurement, should one not include the effect of pressure or the axial pressure? Yes, but if you release the pressure completely, would that line collapse and be right on top of something else in undoped samples? So here, Neal temperature is in some sense enhances what you already put by hand by including delta being the orbital frequency.
I mean, delta has a small effect on the actual TNL, but the important point here is that you probe this instability.
Yeah. Just like you had some non-zero K naught, but you still want to get fuller in the normal
right.
Temperature.
But what I want to point out is that even above Neal temperature, he still sees non-zero.
Because K naught is non-zero.
What do you call K naught?
Well, the stuff that you put by putting delta by hand.
Right, but that delta, that delta is equivalent to orbital. Many people would argue, well, that orbital order cannot possibly be there because, structural transition must coincide with the Neal temperature in the undoped samples, for example. Well, Tn is equal to Ts. Delta is zero above Tn.
What is your question exactly? What is your question?
I wanted to disentangle, because I get your comment on disentangling the effect of delta, which comes from the Euclidean by Hannon from the Enzi and the Weiser or different, and proximity of being positive away from the Euclidean.
Well, I mean, so the model itself, it does not have a dynamic phase. This has a spin phase, like a, it has a spin density wave instability, right?
So but to is not zero, you don't know.
If the delta is
zero, so we can call it
the microphase. Yeah. So that's the thing here. So that, then to model the strain, we put in this orbital splitting. Right. And this, what I said, we've done in several ways. And, mm-hmm. and the important point for this part is that it singles out part of the spin fluctuations.
Yeah, so putting it even more general, right? So, because anybody who is sane realizes that, you know, it's orbital or spin driven, it's not a sharp question. It's always a matter of degree, right? Because they both exist, and symmetry wise, it's all the same, actually, it's the same. And therefore it's a matter of degree. Now you have this multi-orbital model, and there's surely this sort of degrees of freedom building. But I sort of get the impression that the fact that there is orbital degeneracy built in is playing its role, although it's also the driving force, it's still playing its role. Is that correct?
It's orbital.
It's like an amplifier of the opinions of spin.
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah, so it amplifies the anisotropy.
It amplifies anisotropy, yes.
You amplify anisotropy.
Yeah.
And then the question, what amplifies anisotropy?
Yeah.
Okay, so I focused on this part. So this was one point of my list of resistivity problems, and I've focused on this pneumatic impurities. Yes?
So exactly, how sensitive is
this amplification phenomenon to what looks to me like a bit of Born approximation
for the scattering right here?
Right. So we have not explored that. The temperature where this starts setting in, it will always set in because you're approaching this ability. But this little scale here is determined by delta, this filling equilibrium. Okay, what happens to these guys as we go below the nail transition then? So what actually does a point-like impurity look like in this kind of metallic phase? So we've done this calculation, and what happens is that as you cool down, the system prefers to go to these dimer states, these completely different states. This is as far away as you can imagine from an on-site delta potential impurity. And the reason for this is actually more energetically costly to have a huge repulsion on one side than to spread out the charge and make a slightly different magnetic structure. And then you have just some remnant charges out here in the ends. So this simply comes out of this of the self-consistent calculation. Yeah? So this is the magnetization, sorry. This is the magnetization in real space. Okay? So it's oriented along the A-axis. And if you look at the density modulation, this was the original potential. It has spread out and left some charges out here. This state has lower energy than that's just a single on-site delta form. Strong potential, of course. It's rather strong potential.
Going back to the same question as Andy. So outside you have striped magnetic order.
Yeah.
Is it true that inside you have something like checkerboard?
Or yes. Inside it's checkerboard. Yeah.
It says get a little fine-tuning condition there, right? The checkerboard and such has to be sort of close-ish in energy, otherwise it wouldn't happen.
Yeah, and they are actually close-ish in energy. Yeah. This phase, the pi zero, if you do the unrestricted medial hydrophoric, it's full of magnetic phases. Yeah. Also non-collinear phases, if you map out as a function of doping and parameters like U and J. All right, so this is a chart. So you of course know that in the LDOS, if you look at certain energies, you will also see these dimer states. And so I talked about them already. And here's the dimer state in 122, barium 122, doped with cobalt. This was this paper, which Milan did. He focuses on something else in his talk, but this is the measurement. These are the measurements. This is a current map. They've taken the LDOS and integrated it up. Some small range, And then they have modeled each dopant as a kind of dimer. So this is just put in by hand as a Gaussian dimer. And then they have seen that actually the autocorrelation of this map with itself and the Fourier transform seem to match very well. So each cobalt ion is in this, and this is in the spin density wave phase, is changed into this kind of dimer state. So here we did the same, and we find some kind of dimer state. And it's the spacing actually also matches pretty well with this kind of 8 lattice spacing that they find here. But in our model, actually, this depends a little bit on how fast you cool down. Okay, so what is the resistivity scenario then? Now, in this phase, you will clearly scatter much more, right? Now we have huge elongated scattering potentials. So electrons moving this way will be scattered much more than that. And that's nice because the resistivity remains larger along the B-axis below this temperature. But we have done, but we would like to do the actual calculation. Well, that's a little tricky in this real space formalism. So we've done something slightly simpler. We've taken a simpler model just with two bands, a whole band, an electron band, in the spin density wave phase. We've added this order, and then we have cranked up the spin density wave order parameter, and we mapped out the total, this is now the total resistivity as a function of this scattering rate and this magnetic disorder potential. And it turns out that actually you can, why should it drop so much? This is kind of strange. I focused on this little region with the upturn here, right? But why should it, you go into a magnetically ordered state, you're supposed to lose many carriers, like in chromium, this resistivity should go up. But it goes down. And in the model calculation of this simple kind, it actually does mostly go up. But it's possible to get to enter a regime, this is a blue regime here, where it does go down. This, we also look at the black curve here. This is all Yan Wang's work. And the reason for that is that the scattering rate overcompensates. The loss of carriers is overcompensated by a collapse of the scattering rate in this particular regime.
It's not unusual to observe either of the two. Okay. Yes. Okay. Remaining. I think that brings us back to the question Jim was asking, because now the scattering rate depends whether you're born or the large phase shift, depending on either open density of states or basically inverse of the density of states, and you will get different, presumably, depends here because it's large. When the density of state goes down, you basically lose the scattering rate. In the region of strong scattering, it would be the other way, right?
There could also be inelastic scattering.
No, of course.
But this is all elastic. I don't know if he, I don't actually know if he's done that too. But
I mean, the inelastic component can play a very important role.
Right. But so here, I mean, if we look at the data, so why are we focused on elastic scattering? So if we look at the data in this regime here, if we extrapolate at least to zero in this form, just fit this with this kind of function, you get this huge elastic component in this regime, which at least motivates doing this. But this is also Raphael and other, we're not the first to point that out. This is one of the experimental plots, one of these kind of plots. It's all 1, 2, 2. But what I've said so far in this particular calculation is with vegetable disorder, V0. Now we know that the disorder is not, it is these nematodes, it's long, elongated. So we played around with other, adding another impurity potential, which is just a row of three impurities next to each other, to make a simple analogy of what we found in the self-consistent calculation. Yeah.
Isn't the, even if you take a vegetable disorder, isn't the very fact that magnetic order is uniaxial will just renormalize the impurity scattering and make effectively the same term as you put by hand?
Yes, but we don't include that in this calculation, right? That the other calculation showed that, but in this calculation that is not done self-consistently in that way.
No, I'm not talking about self-consistent. I'm just saying that you have diagonalized quadratic form. You have to come to new formulas, and you have to rewrite impurity scattering in terms of new formulas. And this will dress up the node by coherence factors.
Right.
And will give you this term.
question.
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt.
I'll have to check exactly what he did in there, but I see your point. But somehow that's not happening. Okay, so now when we include the nematogens, this is the total resistivity. Now, if we include these, of course, it splits along the A and the B axis. So the red curve is the resistivity along B. And it remains large always, no matter what ellipticity we have. This was the point I tried to make earlier. It remains larger just because it's a part of the potential that gives rise to this anisotropy. So the total one will have this larger resistivity along B, and it has this large drop because we've taken parameters in the regime that exists. So the summary of this cartoon summary is that we have this kind of resistivity dependence, temperature dependence of the resistivity for these vegetable impurities. You know, there's a lot of them actually. The system is very, very dirty. But then we have on top of this, we have these nematogens which are strong scatterers. For example, cobalt goes directly in the iron arsenide planes. And I've shown that they have this dependence. So if we add this up in a naive way, we get this kind of picture that seems to at least qualitatively consistent with what tends to be found in this regime. Now, what about then the doping dependence? So here it's very important that this is doped with potassium, which goes out of the plane. It's weak scatterers. You don't have these nematogens at all in this site, right? So they're simply not there. So in our picture, it's not band structure effect. There is, of course, a band structure effect. It's a small effect. But the main effect is that they are not there to generate this large anisotropy. Whereas you have these all over the place, but they don't give rise to the anisotropy. All right, so the counterintuitive sign is just because of the anisotropic spin fluctuations or these dimer states in the spin density wave phase. The annealing dependence is part of the whole picture. It's an impurity picture. The C2 symmetric impurity states I've talked about. The increase I've talked about here seems to be coming out. The doping dependence I just described. And also, of course, as we overdope enough with electrons, we move away from the spin density wave phase. We need to have anisotropic spin fluctuations. So there they will always go away. And at large enough temperatures, these guys die, so that will also go away. So we believe that we have a picture for describing all of these points. And Ian Fisher pointed out that there's an intrinsic part to this, which I agree with. It comes from the intrinsic anisotropic spin fluctuations is crucial. The dependence on this is undoped barium 1-2. The triple R's are very different, but they find the same resistivity anisotropy here. And this completely is in agreement with our picture, because here there are no nematogens. This is the vegetable states giving rise to this difference. They should not affect the resistivity anisotropy. And if you add different concentrations of disorder that should give rise to anisotropy, you still see the same effect here. But within our picture, at least, if you are in the dilute limit, the resistivity just scale with the concentration of this disorder. And this guy is related to the ratio. This is rho B minus rho A over rho B plus rho A. So the concentration drops out. So I don't see any inconsistency with this data. I don't know how I'm doing on time. I think I'm...
There were many questions, so
Okay. So let me tell you a little bit about something else. This is this material. Barium 1-2 dope with this material. It acts, we know now this does not dope the system. These compounds do not become superinducting. And these ions are, as you might expect, highly magnetic. So this is really putting magnetic impurities into the system. It was very interesting because if you put enough, you see a magnetic Bragg peak at the usual vector, but you see no splitting. This is X-rays. You see no splitting. So there seems to be a magnetic phase. So typically they go more or less together, right? So this is at low doping, they die at the same time. But the only point I want to make here is that at enough manganese, you have a magnetic peak and apparently no orthorhombic distortion. So And here is the more the doping dependence of these systems. So you have a magnetic peak and no splitting. So this phase was advocated by several famous people to maybe arise from this kind of C4 symmetric magnetic state. Lorenzana also has, and collaborators also have proposed this picture. So there could be a tetragonal magnetic phase, which would be very important with these orbital based scenarios from spin-based scenarios. But we asked the question, how can you really magnetic, if they add these ions, add strongly disorder the system as magnetic impurities, how can I really tune the system from this state to this state? And in our picture, it doesn't do that. We actually do find, many times we do find these states. They are there in doping levels and so on. But in this, for this particular case, we do not believe that that's the important point. Inosov et al. Have a recent paper where they find the same effect. Forget about these plots. They find the same Bragg peak at high temperatures, at very high temperatures. Right? You add all this disorder, and this Bragg peak is very, very sharp and static, is generated. That's kind of amazing. You put all this disorder in, and you generate a long-range ordered phase with the same Q vector. But they did another study of the structural properties and found that actually you have coexistence of orthorhombic little regions and tetragonal small regions. That can be hard to distinguish. It remains a controversy. These groups do not agree on this problem.
I mean, yeah. your little called checkboard magnet associated with these metagens.
Yeah.
That's basically the same kind of phase as people claim here, right? That you give off these segments.
Yeah, kind of.
Really not much of a difference.
I'll get to that. I mean, here you actually see the pi-pi phase.
Yeah.
So they've seen also this in neutrons. This is the pi-pi phase. So the theoretical challenge here is that to dope the system with magnetic impurities, how can they induce, or they induce pi-pi order locally, some kind of diffuse scattering in the vicinity of that NMR, and it also knows that this the pi-pi structure happens in the vicinity of these.
I wanted to ask you a question, this question, right, at the end of the talk. So I would say that when your theory about the metagens, these other systems, is correct, then I would expect that you would see a neutron scattering at some point if you were scattering associated with pi-pi, because you make just local regions of pi-pi.
Yes.
And can I read this as, okay, manganese is just a bit of more tough impurity is doing better the job. Here you see the origin of the metagen.
From the theoretical point of view, these impurities are a little simpler because it's a magnetic impurity, it's a large magnetic impurity. So it doesn't have to induce its circumference.
Everybody wants to organize pi-pi domains.
Right. So the pi-pi structure, it's not exactly the same, but I'm just going to agree with you because I'm running out of time. The local part is pi-pi, and that is what's seen. The most interesting here is why do you get this pi zero order at such high temperatures if you only add enough of them? That's the sort of the new thing that come out there.
Before you go further, pi pi and pi zero are in folded zone and unfolded zone.
It is
which zone do you? Because you showed
one
arpis, which is folded zone.
Right, one ion.
One ion. So we shouldn't take it
in
comparison with the arpis.
No. Mm-hmm. I have to finish, right? Yeah, so let me skip. It's the same model just now with magnetic impurities. We've studied all these details of how they act in the system. We add now concentration of them, do Monte Carlo simulations to make sure that it's minimized. And if we don't have enough, it's just boring. We have this pi-pi scattering diffuse from these local little regions. But if we add enough, look, what appears is a beautiful sharp pi zero peak. And the physics of this is just these halos. You know, they polarize large regions around them. But these regions start feeling each other if you have enough, if the distance becomes large enough. And the system itself is prone, it really wants to go magnetic. So you actually gain energy if these all align and cooperate and make a kind of weak pi zero state in the bulk here. So you see these very sharp peaks that come from all these collaborative regions in between the impurities.
But pi zero and zero pi are still equivalent.
Right. Pi zero, zero pi are still equivalent. Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, in
so
this particular,
other peaks.
Yeah, that's another configuration would have that. Yeah. Right.
Get rid of that by taking enough configurations, and then you see that it's
Yeah. So here you see it. This is disorder. This is disorder averaged. This is just from one, right? So it's all about overlapping regions. This gives rise to interesting discussion. We've done this exchange map. This is unusual RKKY interactions. Actually, these long-ranged polarized regions does not give you a cosine 2kF over R cubed.
Do I understand that your magnetic impurity is not doing the messages before, like isotropic impurities?
It's doing, Maria likes to call them flowers.
Yeah,
they do not do this, right? They generate these polarized.
That's a prediction that the magnetic impurity is doing the more isotropic flower, and non-magnetic is doing the messaging. Is it clear why?
But that's because now in this picture I'm above PM and I haven't breaking this orbit about the band. So everything is completely traveling on the band of this PM. And impurities reflect whatever the band is in. And when we saw first these nematodians above TN, I had breaking the symmetry by hand with this orbit about the
band. So what happens when you play here, the symmetry by hand?
I would see it also with them.
So they're not really qualitatively different, magnetic and non-magnetic.
There's no breaking of the trigonal symmetry.
I just ask, what is the magic of being a magnetic impurity compared to being a non-magnetic impurity when you look at these impurities?
Well, actually, we're still studying exactly that.
You don't quite know it.
No, we don't quite know it. I don't know in this particular case. Right. So, but anyway, this lives above TN. It has the structure. You can look at the red curve here. It's the same kind of smeared. Impurity-induced long-range order phase. And I have to stop. We find this pi scattering, and again, I think we explain these 4 points at least. And I'll skip the last part because I'm out of time, right?
Yeah. So that's right. We're almost up all over time. If there's any other question that like if in the flow of the talk, right?
May I ask one issue clarification? So what do you call TNL if you see Bragg peaks? So the statement that you see Bragg peaks above normal temperature.
Right, so it's related to the nail temperature of the case without manganese. So
as close as you talk nail temperature more. So couldn't you just say if nail temperature goes up when manganese is open?
You could say that. I mean, you could define, it's a matter of words, right? You want to define this as your nail temperature in this particular system, right?
Yeah, it's not very classy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It should be very classy.
It's impurity smear transition, right?
It's not a nail transition, glass transition.
Well, the intensity grows slowly as well, right? So the question is...
I can show you what it looks like in the model. This is what it looks like.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, so you see these puddles. So if you have this, if you assume some magnetoelastic coupling of the standard kind that gives rise to the structural transition within pictures of Chupakov and Fernandez and so on, there will be regions, small regions that are orthorhombic, small regions coexistent with the tetragonal. So that qualitatively might be consistent with this recent finding too.
Can I ask a question? And again, this is more for qualifications. So you showed a bunch of STM data by Rosenthal and others. So what is the hard evidence for the existence of dimers, which you call nematogens from STM? Can you see them in the raw topography maps?
They hit you in the face.
They are pretty much wherever they look.
Yeah, it was really experimentally discovered. And initially nobody had a clue.
Right.
This is the one you met. I mean, it's not the best picture, but actually.
Well, but I'd love to see the zoom in and depending on the scale where
it's in the paper. In the paper, you can see they have great zoom ins of these.
Right, but in your talk a couple of slides later, you had something where you could see atomic scale and you could see what they modeled as
well. This one? No. Or maybe if you talk about the 1-2-2.
Maybe it was different.
Seamus Davis.
These little pictures
right,
out here.
Okay, so if I look at this picture, so presuming that's a zoom in of the real data, panel B, right?
Yeah.
So is that on the scale of the atomic?
Yes. This is one. Right, the same one.
So are we sure that there's a physically non two impurities that just happen to form a dimer because of the, you know, to reduce the energy? Because that's how it's
happening. Well, I mean, listen, they don't know exactly what it's like. This is what you measure. Now, how can you model it? If you could, but what they know what the doping is, they know what how many cobalts you have. So the assumption that one cobalt generates this really seems to, I mean, this is convincing to me at least, that this really seems to match this case.
Right? That's how detailed early on this came out, right? And then it was like, perhaps you can explain this as impurity pairs, but then there has to be a magic formalism that binds it together over a fairly natural distance.
Right.
I think this is probably the smallest thing.
The amount they put in the simulation here exactly matches the doping level. Cobalt,
so. I see. So you're saying that the number of blocks is actually half the amount of cobalts. So in other words, each cobalt produces a pair
right.
of those one.
Right. Something like
really the know number this. Of pairs is
that
exactly
the same. Know this?
Exactly.
The amount right. of blocks.
Yeah, they actually was part of the analysis, I know as well. And they just sprinkle impurities at random, right? So they know how many impurities there are. Right? And that sort of fits the average you see in the picture very well. Mm-hmm.
That's
right, the only way to really get this diamond thing is bind these things in pairs of two, which are unlikely, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
Reasonable.
Can I just sort of ask maybe a bit of a philosophical question? So I thought that part of the interest in this impurity physics was that there was some suggestion that maybe the anisotropy electronic anisotropy is not intrinsic, it's purely the disorder effect. I don't think you are saying that, right? So you're saying, oh, we can argue where the resistivity anisotropy come from. But if I go back to sort of one step further, one could ask the anisotropy that's seen in the Alpers experiments and anisotropy that's seen in the spin dynamics measurement would you some connection as to how disorder would affect that?
I don't think they can see that. I would say that the ARPIS anisotropy and the spin anisotropy, the Pan-Cheng diasis, is all intrinsic.
Yeah. And disorder
what, I mean, could be strain induced in some of them, right? But it's not related to disorder effects.
Right. Okay.
We need the disorder effect to explain all these features and upturn of the sensitivity, the difference in doping and so on. But without the intrinsic part, not all of what my results were, not neutral. We need both.
Is it the one phrase opposite in the sense that you're saying that any intrinsic anisotropy just enhances impurity scattering and this is what you get?
I don't know if you can say it generally enhances impurity scattering, but it enhances the anisotropy of impurity scattering.
It's an anisotropy.
Yeah.
It affects the manifestation of
In a dramatic way, right? In a way that hasn't been seen anywhere else. I presume I haven't seen it anywhere else.
Okay, so thank you.
Thanks.